The following program has been produced and underwritten by Friendships Unlimited.
It's time to get underway with Radio Friendships. Stay tuned as your hosts, Don and Sandra Tipton, share exciting news about what God is doing throughout the world in this missions-minded radio broadcast.
When we truly seek God, He will meet us right where we are. Our surroundings will never limit God and His desire to be with us. Welcome to Radio Friendships. Today, we will be reading from the book, Jesus and Company. This is a story of ordinary Christians who, because they trust their extraordinary God, live with daily miracles. You too can experience these same kind of miracles in your life if you're willing to say yes to God. It matters very little if you are at a church pew, a park bench, or even at an unlikely chili restaurant in Los Angeles. Stay tuned as we listen to this chapter in the book called Texas Lucy's.
It was time for Gratitude to make her maiden mercy voyage. We planned to run down the West Coast to gather up supplies and then to turn her bow toward the Philippine Islands. It was a brave plan and was going to take some faith since we only had $12 in the bank and hardly enough fuel to get out of Puget Sound. We had agreed that for now we wouldn't ask anyone for money. We had a challenge. Before we could sail, we had to come up with money for oil pollution insurance, which is required by Coast Guard regulations. We also needed to move Spirit from Pier 66 to Pier 91 before Sandra, Jamie, and I could leave town with Gratitude. Finally, it was time to consider vessel registration for the Gratitude. We wanted to register her as a yacht because she was a private vessel with volunteer crew members who neither paid for passage nor were paid as crew. We intended only to carry gifts as donations to the poor. We would do absolutely no commercial service. In order to register as an American yacht, we would have fallen under regulations that would have been difficult for this ship to comply with, since Gratitude was originally constructed as a fishing vessel. So we decided that our best registry would be as a foreign yacht. About this time, a wonderful friend named Peter Chignall, who ran a prison ministry on the South Pacific island of Tonga and was in the U.S. on a speaking tour, came to stay with us on the ship. Peter was an eloquent gentleman from New Zealand who had worked for the New Zealand School Board as superintendent for Tonga's educational system. Late in his career, he decided to take an early retirement, give up all of his earthly belongings, and move into the horrendous Tonga prison to live and work as their chaplain. Like the inmates, he slept on the floor with the rats and the bugs. He spent his days ministering to the prisoners, working to improve their living conditions, and giving Bible studies inside the prison and at the palace. Peter was thrilled to have the privilege of leading two men, the nation's prime minister and Tonga's most notorious murderer, hand in hand, in a prayer of commitment to Jesus. We had fallen in love with this man, and with the great measure of Christ's love that we found in him. When we discussed our registration situation with Peter, he asked us to consider registering Gratitude in Tonga. He said he would make all the arrangements with the Tongan government. We agreed, and he began to work with the palace on our behalf. Although they were pleased to receive our ship's registry, the prince who was in charge of maritime affairs told us that they had not yet designed official documentation for yachts, as Tongan yachts required no documentation. So by the time we were ready to sail, we still had no document in hand. The Coast Guard informed us that it was not possible to leave port without proper papers, and, as far as we knew, leaving port without an official document had never been legally done. But we did have a telegram which said that the Tongan government welcomed the vessel Gratitude as a Tongan yacht in principle, although they had no official or even unofficial paperwork for now. The trick would be to convince the U.S. Coast Guard that it would be okay to let us sail internationally with only a telegram from the King of Tonga as a document. When next we met with the Coast Guard, we explained to the local officials that Tonga had issued a telegram that, as far as they were concerned, allowed us to sail. Meanwhile, a not-so-friendly Coast Guard official, who had caused us problems in the past, sent a telegram to the King of the Kingdom of Tonga, without informing us. It read something like, The United States Coast Guard is allowing Tonga's yacht Gratitude to sail from Puget Sound, but it will not be welcomed back in U.S. waters. This telegram had far-reaching effects, since at about that same time, negotiations were in process to establish a U.S. naval base and airstrip in this island nation. Also, Tonga had precious fishing grounds scattered throughout its many waters that were of great interest to our American fishing fleets. We heard that when the King of Tonga received the telegram and read that his only official yacht was no longer welcome in America, and that this determination had been made through a captain in the Coast Guard with no notice from the State Department or from our president, he was infuriated. It was unheard of that such an official act of the United States government had taken place without negotiations or proper protocol. He considered it an insult to him and all his people. I received a phone call from a very alarmed Peter Chignall. He said that the King was furious that the United States would treat him with such utter disregard, and that he was preparing a letter of retaliation to the President, demanding the removal of all American flag vessels from Tongan territory and their 200-mile fishing limit. Furthermore, no American ship would be welcome in Tongan waters. The U.S. State Department was extremely alarmed and obviously upset that a local Coast Guard captain would take it upon himself to dictate foreign policy to another sovereign country. This was a great mistake. So now it seemed we had become a political hot potato to the Coast Guard, and they began to treat us carefully. They issued us our safety inspection certificates and lifted the port hold off the ship. Even though our only document was still just a telegram, we now had full, unprecedented Coast Guard approval. As the Coast Guard officers were leaving the ship from their inspection, all paperwork complete, a lieutenant said, "Oh, by the way, have you checked things out with customs?" I answered, "We're not leaving the United States. We're only going down the coast now, so we thought we'd check with customs before going out of San Diego." "Oh, of course," he replied. "Everything is okay with us for you to sail, but as a small favor to me, would you mind just calling customs and telling them that you're leaving? The Coast Guard comes under the authority of customs, and that would be good procedure." I said I would. Jamie and I talked about how polite the Coast Guard had become. We were pleased at how different their attitude was now from the hostile posture they had adopted for the past several months. We gave customs a call, as we said we would. As I explained our reason for calling, the customs official on the other end of the phone seemed quite familiar with our ship's situation. "Why are you calling me?" she said. "We've settled this with the Coast Guard. They were told that under no circumstances would you be allowed to leave port. No ship enters and leaves American waters without proper documentation. It isn't done. It hasn't been done since the establishment of our maritime laws, and it won't be done now." We told the official about our Coast Guard inspections and what they had said to us. "I don't know what games are being played," she replied. "They've been speaking to us on this matter for several days. They know our position well. I can tell you it won't do any good, but I'll call Washington, D.C. It's late in the day there, so I'll have to hang up and call them right now." A few minutes later, the phone rang. It was the official from Customs. She was quite astonished and said, bewildered, "I don't know who you know in Washington, but they told me to release you and accommodate you however we can. Hands off." "So," she continued, "as crazy as it sounds, this is the way it's got to happen. Customs is viewing you as an American fishing boat, and the Coast Guard sees you as a Tongan yacht. You don't have paperwork for either one, but we've been told not to stand in your way. So if you see what appears to be a customs officer, run up the American flag and consider yourself a U.S. fishing boat. If you have any problems, they can call me. But if you see the Coast Guard, get out your Tongan flag and run it up. If you run into problems, refer them back here to the Seattle Coast Guard. I haven't heard of anything like this in my whole career, and neither has anyone else in this whole office. So, Godspeed."
Hi, this is Jeff Reed, and you are listening to Radio Friendships.
We loaded up supplies aboard Gratitude and planned our trip. Stops in San Francisco, Sacramento, Los Angeles, and San Diego, picking up supplies for the Philippines. Then we shifted Gratitude from Pier 70 to Pier 66 and promptly experienced a long series of mishaps. Our engine crew had run the generator out of fuel, and it died just as we were about to back out. As we were casting off, the main engine shut down because our bright but inexperienced engineer had borrowed a valve, moving it from one spot to another, then forgetting to move it back. The lines tangled, and the bow of the ship aimed straight for Pier 70. We got the engine started just in the nick of time and sailed from Pier 70. As we arrived at Pier 66, there was some trouble with the lines and the stern swung out toward the Edgewater Hotel. Somehow we managed to dock her without further embarrassing incident. Agnes Newmer's group, Summer Haven Ranch, had a long-standing relationship with a Los Angeles area Church of the Nazarene minister who had given them some problems. We had decided to give him a wide berth because each time Summer Haven dealt with him, it seemed to us that it created a worse situation than the time before. But Summer Haven, in their mercy, continued to help him and minister to him whenever they could. They told him of our small ship Gratitude sailing to the Philippines. He was given our phone number, and after some special arrangements of his own, he decided he'd do us a great big favor. He called me on the phone and told me that my problems were over. He had made arrangements with a woman from a Philippine family, very close friends of his who were extremely rich, to pay for all of our expenses to the Philippines. Whatever I needed, I just had to name it. So I asked who this rich lady was who claimed to be willing to spend any amount of money. "Oh," he said, "she's well connected in high places in the Philippines." I said, "How high and how political, and who are you talking about?" That's when he announced that his friend was the niece of the deposed dictator of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos. "Listen," I said, my voice very direct. "I want you to hear me very clearly. You do not have my permission to talk to anybody regarding my ships. You never have had, and you never will have. I have never spoken to anybody in the Marcos regime." Ferdinand Marcos, only a few weeks before, had been accused of trying to ship arms into the Philippines in a failed attempt to overthrow the present government. "I'm going to hang up the phone now. Please don't ever call me again regarding anything to do with the Philippines or the Marcos." I hung up, naively thinking that I had just put a decisive end to it. I knew that for us to carry anything aboard Gratitude originating from the Marcos family was undoubtedly a political ploy and sure death to our mission. If word of a possible relationship between us and the Marcos leaked out to the Philippine government, our ship would be turned away with all the gifts that were to go to the children and the poor. 2 days later, at 9 o'clock in the evening, Sandra took a call at the Spirit office. It was from a reporter in Hawaii who told her he had received on the wire a story that representatives of the Marcos family were claiming over national radio that they were sending relief cargo on a ship from Seattle and that they wished to work in coordination with the current president of the Philippines, Mrs. Aquino, to host the vessel. The reporter told us that President Aquino had responded in a radio broadcast in the Philippines saying that there was no possible way this Marcos ship from Seattle would be permitted into their waters. The reporter called Marcos' aide in Trinidad, who gave him details on the mission, and told him that the name of the ship was the Spirit. And, he said, now that Aquino had rejected the shipment, the Spirit ship would need to be rerouted to another country. Sandra listened to what the reporter said, horrified. She asked him to hold on as she ran to find me and bring me to the phone. The reporter repeated his allegations to me. Of course, I denied the reporter's story in no uncertain terms, but by this time, he was determined to find out if we were a front for a pro-Marcos faction. A few days later, I spoke to Paul Dean, the Los Angeles Times reporter who was familiar with our operations. Paul was kind enough to phone the reporter in Hawaii to tell him that he was on the wrong track. That almost convinced him to drop the story. However, during the course of their conversation, Paul happened to mention that we had been held up partly because of registration problems. The reporter from Hawaii called the Coast Guard and found out that we were intending to register Tongan. Now, it just so happened that Marcos had recently been boasting of his friendship with the King of Tonga. It had been reported that he intended to launch a coup against President Aquino from Tonga because of its location in the Pacific, and that he had recently applied for and received a Tongan passport. The reporter called us back to confront us with this new information. This was turning into a real nightmare. Finally, we called the CIA to let them know what was happening and to proclaim our innocence. They assured us that they knew all about us and realized we were not a front for Marcos. Eventually, the reporter dropped the story, but by this time, our relationship with the Philippine government had become severely compromised. Then came the exciting morning we were to sail from Pier 66 in Seattle's Puget Sound. We were to launch our first ship in the Lord's Navy, and that very day he brought in the great white lady, Anastasis. The Mercy ships youth with a mission vessel to the dock right next to us for a proper send-off. Another ship in God's Navy, Anastasis, is a large passenger ship that carries Christian missionaries and medical personnel, providing services, evangelism teams, and supplies to many developing nations. We had a great opportunity for fellowship with the crew of the large vessel before we prepared to set sail. As gratitude backed out, our volunteer on the dock got anxious and cast off the stern line before he was told to. This caused the stern to swing out toward the Edgewater Hotel. Sandra and I stood on the deck with our hearts pounding and prayed with all our might. Did every move of the gratitude have to be so hair-raising?
This is Sandra Tipton, and you're listening to Radio Friendships from Port Mercy in Lake Charles.
Guests at the hotel, accustomed to watching commuter ferries coming in and out on a regular basis, never suspected we weren't in total control. As gratitude drifted within 20 to 30 feet of their windows before pulling out, they came out on their balconies to wave to us. Finally, as we headed out to sea, with the sound of our friends on the dock singing Hallelujah to the Lord, both Sandra and I wept and praised God for bringing to fruition a small part of the vision He had given us. The Anastasis blew her loud horn in farewell and approval. At last, we were operating an international shipping line, but still on a very slim budget. We had just launched a ship to the Philippines with 20 crew members and only enough fuel to reach San Francisco. We had funds of less than $200 in our entire operation. Still, we owned all that we had, every ship, every piece of equipment, free and clear. We had no debts and owed no one anything. Maybe we were better off than the big ship companies after all. Each port had generously agreed to give us free short-term moorage, and we were working on getting all other services free of charge for the ship in each city. By this time, we had managed to get oil pollution insurance, and John Hoff had given us enough fuel to make it to San Francisco. If any port decided not to waive fees, or if any other unexpected charge popped up, we were in trouble. Then, of course, there was the need for fuel to enable us to sail from San Francisco to Sacramento, from Sacramento to Los Angeles, from Los Angeles to San Diego, from San Diego to Manila, and from Manila home. But we felt that the Lord was sending us, so off we went. Meanwhile, a spirit of fear had descended on the spirit crew, assisted by one troublesome lady volunteer who had been having meetings at her home to discuss with dissenting crew members the evils of our leadership. That spirit of fear succeeded in pulling away about 22 of our best crew. We were upset but didn't have a lot of time to deal with it. We swung back by the spirit before leaving town, put out what fires we could, then headed out. In San Francisco, we wanted to get a berth in Fisherman's Wharf, where hopefully many people would want to tour gratitude. We figured we'd take a 55-gallon drum, paint it red with white letters that said donations, and hope people visiting the ship would throw in a dollar or two. In this way, we thought perhaps we could accumulate enough fuel money to sail to Sacramento, and so on in each port. We were upset to be assigned to a berth outside of town, where no one knew we existed. But in the days to come, we were relieved to be tied up at this isolated dock because so much of our load arrived in San Francisco. That meant tractor trailers were pulling in from morning till night, and the dock we had been provided had ample space to work and freedom to maneuver. Had we been at Fisherman's Wharf, it would have been impossible to take on the cargo. Then, just as we completed loading, the wharfinger called to say that the port needed our pier because the Pope was coming to town and the pier was to be used as a parking lot. Would we mind moving to Fisherman's Wharf? We were delighted. Certainly, Jesus was in control. San Francisco met us with great warmth. One company came to repair our crew's freezer for no charge. Another repaired the Caterpillar engine head for free. A welding company gave us 200 pounds of rod. A sanitation company provided free porta-potties, and a hospital gave us brand new beds as cargo. We spoke on radio shows and were invited to speak at some local churches. Many people toured and left a dollar here and there. Pretty soon we had accumulated $2,500, enough to buy fuel for Los Angeles. While in Sacramento, we received a call from a shipbroker from Seattle. He had been contacted by a group of men who wanted to purchase gratitude. He told them we were not likely to sell, so they had located a cargo ship in the Bahamas that would be more efficient for our mission, and they offered us a trade. We agreed to see the new ship and think it over. Gratitude sailed to the port of Los Angeles and then on to San Diego. During this time, we awaited news from the group that wanted to trade vessels. We had thought we'd get press coverage coming into our hometown of Los Angeles. A few TV stations did schedule to greet us at the dock when the ship pulled in at Long Beach, but our plans were not God's plans. That morning, a big earthquake hit Los Angeles, so no press showed up for us. A few days later, CNN scheduled to interview us. They had been calling and asking for a story for days, and we said okay. But the morning they were to come, the stock market crashed and they were busy elsewhere. So much for publicity. When we arrived in Los Angeles, the Lord began to put it on my heart that we were to stay, and He would develop a warehouse base and office in the Los Angeles area. But as usual, we had no money. And when the Gratitude sailed on to San Diego, there would only be Sandra, myself, and a topless CJ7 Jeep. I phoned a pastor named Wayne Coombs, whom I had met a year back in Seattle at a Full Gospel businessmen's meeting. He was a pastor at a new church in the wealthy community of Palos Verdes, who had said that if I was ever in Los Angeles to give him a call and come to the church and speak. I figured that by this time he would have forgotten me and his invitation, but I called anyway. He hadn't forgotten. He invited me to speak at the next Sunday morning service. I had never been invited to speak at a Sunday morning church service and was really surprised but happy to accept. During that week, before I spoke, Wayne paid me a visit at the docks. He arrived while I was negotiating a possible trade with local fishermen, our fishing nets, for their diesel fuel. Sunday morning I drove to his church located atop a hill in affluent Palos Verdes. It was an out-of-use school, converted into an elegant sanctuary having a congregation of about 250 people. The worship music sounded beautiful. Wayne talked to his people about the need for an extra generous collection because the rent was due the next day and the church was low on funds. He took the offering, then introduced me. I spoke, and it seemed that the people were extraordinarily interested in our story. When I was done, Wayne told the congregation about the day that he had visited the ship. He told how he had seen me trying to barter our fish nets for fuel, and that just didn't seem right to him. Wayne said he felt like he should take a second offering, which they did. Then an elder in the church walked forward and whispered something to him. Wayne turned to the congregation, telling them that the man felt the Lord wanted the church to give us both offerings, and Wayne agreed. What a shock. I thought I should stand up and object by saying, "The church needs that money for the rent." But I bit my tongue until the service ended, thinking, rather than embarrass anyone, I could just give the money back to the church later. After the service, people flocked around us to talk. Later, the church staff turned over the offerings. The gift came to more than $15,000. We were astounded. I was still deeply troubled about the church not having enough rent money, feeling like a bandit coming in to speak and running off with all the loot. But Wayne assured me that there had been a third offering which turned out to be the biggest one of all. One lady came forward saying that she would be happy to replace the entire offering. And then a man behind her said he wouldn't miss out on this blessing. He, too, was going to replace the entire church offering. I thought to myself, "Lord, I'm not sure what you're trying to teach me in all this, or if there is a lesson, but one thing is for certain. I have a lot to learn about your ways."
Well, thank you for joining us once again on Radio Friendships. We hope your day was made a little richer by the story today, and that you may use something from it to encourage those around you. If you would like more information about Friendships Unlimited or any other mission opportunity, please call us at 337-433-5022. That number once again is 337-433-5022. Or better yet, go to our website at friendships.org. Well, have a great day, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Friendships broadcast today. Don and Sandra Tipton invite you to join them again next time as we stand in awe of the great God we serve. Friendships is based at Port Mercy in Lake Charles, Louisiana. For information about Friendships Unlimited, dial 337-433-5022. or go on the internet to friendships.org.